time to unleash your inner cowboy with the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Now, here's your host, Alyssa Barnes.
Hello, Earn Your Spurs listeners. Welcome to episode number 20 of the Earn Your Spurs podcast. I'm so glad to be back after Christmas and New Year's, and I'm just ready for all kinds of great things to come in 2015. I will have a couple of big announcements coming up, but right now I just want to share with you that I am going to be launching a new podcast called Cowboy Q&A. It's going to be a short 15-minute Q&A type podcast where you can actually submit your questions to me and I will answer them on the podcast. In order to get that podcast rolling, I just need your questions. It's really easy to do. Just go to earnyourspurs.com and click on the Cowboy Q&A tab. You can also go to earnyourspurs.com/cowboy-QA and find the page there where you can actually just click on the SpeakPipe link and it will allow you to leave me a voicemail. Feel free to send me any questions regarding the Western lifestyle, ranching, rodeo, gear, clothing, anything that you have questions about. Please feel free to submit those. And I assure you, if you have the question, other people do too. So don't ever feel like your question is stupid or not worthy of being answered. Right now, I'm also doing a little bit of promotion for the Cowboy Q&A podcast. The first two questions that I get that I end up using in the podcast will receive a gift certificate for either a cinch shirt or pair of jeans. If you're a fan of Earn Your Spurs on Facebook, you will have seen some of that information probably come up on your feed within the last few days. This is a great opportunity for you to just ask anything that you've ever wanted to know. I mean, maybe you're going on your first dude ranch vacation and you want to know what to expect, or maybe you're interested in getting started roping and you want to know what gear you need, or maybe you just want to learn how to ride a horse and you want to know what clothing you need to have. So anything that you have a question about, please go to earnyourspurs.com and submit. Now on to today's guest. Sam Finden is somebody who contacted me after finding the Earn Your Spurs podcast, and he actually sent me a book that he wrote called Saddle My Good Horse. And throughout the process of our correspondence, he filled me in on how he got involved in the Western lifestyle himself, because he didn't come from that background. He grew up playing hockey and racing motocross in Minnesota, and he sort of stumbled into the Western way of life and horses and ended up eventually in Montana. And so I asked him to come on the show and talk about his story and his experiences as a way to sort of inspire some of you who are interested in following a similar path. And then we do talk about his book as well, which is targeted towards a kind of a young male adolescent audience. And I haven't had a chance to read it myself yet, but it is sitting on my nightstand waiting for me to finish my current book so I can dive into it. It really looks like a great book. So without further ado, allow me to introduce you to Sam Finden. Sam, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate you being here.
Oh, absolutely. It's my pleasure.
Well, the reason I asked you to be a guest is because you have a pretty incredible story when it comes to how you actually got into the Western lifestyle and becoming a horseman. And I was just wondering if you would maybe kind of share that story with the audience.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. I don't know if that's anything special, my story, but I'll be happy to tell it to you if you'd like. It's not like I was born and raised on a ranch or anything. I'm from Minnesota originally. I had a horse when I was real young. Well, I had a pony right away, and that thing was awful. It was terrible. It ran off with me, and my horse career was done. I didn't want anything to do with horses. By the time I was 8 years old, it was just I wasn't exactly a real brave kid when I was younger, so I wound up just finding other things to do, four-wheelers and dirt bikes and things like that. That you know, it sounds funny. Oh, you don't want to ride horses, but you got dirt bikes instead. Well, yeah, at least they weren't trying to kill me, because at that point I figured all horses were trying to kill me. Well, then fast forward, you know, to 22, 21, 22, And I've been to school and gone away from home and come back and ran into a little bit of trouble and learned some things about myself and wound up moving after school back home and then decided I needed to go somewhere else. So I went to Steamboat Springs, Colorado, where we'd gone there skiing when we were younger and had a family friend that lived out there. So I wound up moving to Steamboat Springs, which, you know, if you've ever heard that George Strait song where he says she's riding colts in Steamboat Springs, well, I went out there looking for that girl and it didn't wind up happening. But so I get out there and I'm got a job at the ice arena because when you're from Minnesota, they look at you and say, hey, you need to work at the ice arena. And I said, okay. And so I was there and the thing about a resort town like that, mountain town, is it seems like there's a couple groups of people. Steamboat was always kind of this is the Western living meets, you know, touristy resort town. It was like Aspen with cowboy hats. And I didn't really get on with the people that were ski bumming and they're, you know, being lift operators and whatever else, because there were some things going on that, you know, lifestyle choices that I didn't need to be making. I'd already kind of gotten myself clear of that sort of trouble. So I gravitated towards the ranchers and the people that were outside of town a little bit, the people that I hope at least made money when the town got big and sold their land to it. But I don't know. Anyway, got involved at the local rodeo. They have a PRCA rodeo every Friday and Saturday during the summer. And, you know, it's like every rodeo where they say, oh, we're voted the best small rodeo of this or that or whatever. But it was a pretty good show and it was a beautiful area. And I liked it because I got to go in there and just hang out around the horses. And I'd show up early and they'd give the rodeo secretary, give me a clean shirt that said Steamboat Springs Pro Rodeo every week. And I felt like I was, you know, part of it. And we put on horn wraps and all this stuff early when we get there and, you know, go out and lay out the barrels and then pick them back up and put them on the back of the Ram truck because everybody's got to have a Ram truck, you know, all of that fun stuff. And, you know, it was really good for me. It was a good place to go. Good people. You got to learn a little bit through, I guess, osmosis or whatever about the way rodeo worked and the way the back end of the rodeo business, all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes, you know. And even to this day, when I go to a rodeo, I'm watching the guys that are pulling the barriers and I'm watching the guys that are radioing the scores back to the tower and this and that. And there's a lot going on that's more than what the competitors are doing. And I just like it was a big team effort. And anytime you can see guys working as a team, not just guys, girls too, but working as a team and getting something to go off seamlessly, it's pretty neat. So through that, got to know some more guys that, you know, were local, some ropers and things that were pretty good guys and came from ranch families around town and wound up getting to, you know, go out to their places a few times. And then I had a couple of hunting buddies there because I love to hunt, always have. And so I'd made some friends in my short time there in Steamboat that like to hunt and they all decided that we ought to get into roping. So one of them lived on an old place that was outside of town and they had an old rodeo pen or roping pen, not they didn't have bucket chutes or anything, but we needed to resurrect it a little bit. So we put in new fence and we put in, you know, we had to pick up all the old hog panels that they had used for a return alley and this and that. And we set it up pretty nicely. And at least we thought and put lights up because that was, you know, we all had jobs during the day, so we weren't going to be able to rope in the daylight. So then all we had left to figure out was horses and neighbor guy. Interesting.
All you
guy.
Had left to figure out like that's just a little thing.
But you know, call it naivete, I guess. We didn't think it was any big concern because there are horses all over the place and most of them weren't getting ridden. So it was like, oh, okay, well, we'll just find some horses to use. And there was a neighbor guy that had a couple of horses that he rode once a year. And then he complained about them the rest of the year. And I think that happens quite a bit, actually. But I mean, right now I've got a couple that I'm complaining about because I haven't ridden them enough lately. It's just like, it's kind of how it is. You're either in the saddle or you're upset that you're not in the saddle.
Right.
And so anyway, we borrowed these horses from the neighbor guy, and one of them was this kind of Walker Cross something or other. He was paint, brown and white, real pretty until you got on him, and he was a dingbat. He didn't know where his front feet were. He'd wind up falling down all the time. And another one was a big old Morgan that he was just fat and sassy. He hated everybody and everything. But you know what? Beggars can't be choosers, so we'd go get him. We'd come out after the rodeo was done in town and go out into the pasture. And he had this 40-acre pasture. The guy had a bunch of money, I guess, or something. But anyway, we go out and try and corner him, and it's dark at this point, you know. And we corner him, and we had the one horse he wound up being, this is our great level of horsemanship. He wound up, if you could hit him with the halter and lead rope as he ran by you, he would stop, and then you could put the halter on him.
Wow, that's unusual.
Yeah, it was like the dumbest thing, you know. And I don't want to say that the halter got thrown at him a few times or anything, but anyway, that's how we caught him. And then the trick was you had to ride double bareback down to the gate, and then the other horse would come and be like, "Where are you going? Where are you taking my friend?" And then we catch him, and then we ride bareback to the barn where we'd throw on whatever saddles we could find, which the one guy had a rope saddle, so we thought that was pretty, you know, it was like we'd play rock, paper, scissors, see who got to ride that one. It was so bad. But then we ride him down the dirt road to the arena and play cowboy for a while. We had the neighbor guy, a different neighbor on the other side, he had some steers, so we leased them from him for, I don't know, very little amount of money because they'd already been roped for that year. They weren't fresh, which worked out well for us. But then, man, we were out there messing around with them all summer. And by the end of the time we were there, it was like they would stand in a herd. You could walk up to them. You could ride up to them. You could throw your loop at their feet and try and get them to step in for a heel shot. Then you yank them off their feet. And they're just like, "Why are you doing this to me?" Like, just send me to kill now. I don't know. But they were, we learned a little bit, even, you know, we're so dumb. We'd shoot dog them. We'd rope them off a four wheeler. We'd do all sorts of stupid stuff. But the best part was you get into the arena and we'd be working with these horses that were not very good. And now that I have a little more experience with them, I know exactly how not very good they were. But we'd get down there and play with them and learn how to influence cows on horseback, which is still, when you do it now, it's just magic. It's just great. It's like a drug. You know, you gotta do it at least once in your life for sure, just to realize. I mean, it's one of those few moments where everything just makes sense. It's like, wow, I'm on this horse and I ride over here and the steer moves away because just naturally, and I didn't have to whistle at him. I didn't have to hit him with a rope or anything. He just moved. And that's one of those things that's just, you can't get enough of it. I can see why people, you know, cowboy for a living. It's great.
Yeah. And why people want to go on cattle drives, when even people that aren't, you know, aren't Western people, that's the big thing when they go on a, go to a dude ranch, they want to go on a cattle drive.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's, everybody,
well, you
wants
know.
To, yeah,
everybody, you know, wants, that we'll get to that.
Everybody wants to be John Wayne and the cowboys, you know, they all want to go out and move the herd. They want to be Gus McCall or Gus McCrae.
Yes.
You know, which I'd like to be Gus McCrae too. I think that'd be pretty cool.
Who wouldn't?
Right. But, you know, no, you notice nobody wants to be Woodrow Call.
No, he's a little uptight.
Yeah. But that's okay. You know, in my time, I've probably met more people that are like Call than McCrae, but you know, it's, anyway. So yeah, we're messing around and learning how to do that. And you know, it was really good. It was good, clean, healthy fun. You know, we were out just enjoying working with horses. And, you know, a thing that a lot of people don't realize is there's a lot of physical stuff that goes into actually riding a horse. You know, you think, oh, you just get on the horse, and maybe that's the case sometimes, but the way we were doing it, man, we'd be sprinting around the pasture, and we'd be, you know, try and jump up on these horses, and we'd have to throw the saddles up. And you do that, you know, 4 or 5 nights a week, and you wind up like, oh man, my back kind of hurts, my arms kind of hurt, and boy, I'm losing a little weight here and this and that. It's it's healthy. It's something healthy. It even, you know, walking maybe not so much, but trotting and loping all the time, and you know, then racing the horses back to the barn, which don't do that because they don't stop until you get to where the food is. But, you know, all of that works your core and all of this. It's actually a very good workout. There's a reason you don't see a whole lot of fat horsemen, because mm-hmm. it's just easier and better if you do it more and you get in better shape. But anyway, so after that, I'd been bitten pretty badly by the horse bug and the cowboy bug. And, you know, it was coming on winter, and I was cleaning windows for a living. But in the winter, there's not a whole lot of that that goes on. You know, the resort town, it's a great thing to do in the summer, but not in the winter. So I went looking for work, and there was a ranch outside of town that had started taking on dudes, basically. They did all sorts of things, and they had like 8,000 acres, which at that time I thought was a monstrous piece of ground, which it's still a lot of ground, but, you know, compared to now I'm in Montana. And it's like, oh, okay, I can see 8,000 acres out the window. But anyway, for Colorado, Northwest Colorado, it was a lot of ground. And they had started taking on dudes. There was some hiccup in the cattle price, beef price, years before. And so they started doing trail rides and this and that. And so I hired on with them as like bus driver, snowmobile guide, snowmobile mechanic, wrangler, team driver, chief cook and dishwasher, you know, everything. We did sleigh ride dinners, which was just great. It was my first exposure really to heavy horses. And I had a team of Percherons that they gave me, being that I was the new guy, you know, that I'm some hockey player from, you know, Minnesota. I'm not a cowboy. So they gave me the old broke team, which was just great.
Nice.
And they're like great big puppy dogs, man. I loved it. I'd show up with a busload of people from Florida or whatever. And, you know, they're out. It was a great deal because people would ski for a couple of days in Steamboat, and then they'd be so sore and tired, and they'd have to go do something else. So they'd come out for a sleigh ride dinner, and we'd drive them around on this loop. It was like all over creation to get 1 mile. And then we'd get up to the lodge and drop them off, and then deadhead back to the harness shed. And unharnessing those big horses, you know, it'd be 0 degrees or 5 below on a nice clear night, where the ranch was actually a pretty incredible spot because you could see all the way to the ski hill, and people loved that. You know, it was really cool. But then you get back and you'd unharness these big sweaty horses, and they smell so good. I know that sounds funny, but boy, they just, something about taking that big collar over the top of their ears, you know, it was. My team was so old and broke, we didn't have to worry about unhooking the harness at the top and dropping it down behind their ears. You just pull it right over their head, and they, I mean, they just loved it. But then you had to run up and serve dinner and do dancing and all this stuff, which was great. But it wound up getting to be a little, the whole dude thing is really great. But boy, you got to have a certain personality to do it for very long, because otherwise you just wind up burning out. And so it was a great experience, man. We learned a lot. You know, you go on trail rides and people would be pulling and kicking at the same time, and you hear people lament the fact that, oh, that horse has got a dead face or whatever. Well, lucky for outfits like that there are horses that are a little dead in their face, because otherwise you'd have wrecks all the time.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, we got a little burned out on that. But then, of course, being the will of the wisp young man that I was, I got all smitten with some girl that came up from Texas. They have this big music festival in Texas, or in Steamboat, but it's all Texans that come up. I mean, it's just great. And I don't know how people feel about music, but I challenge you to find better country music than what comes out of Texas. And they'd all come up and ski for a few days and drink for a few more and whatever. And so one day I picked up this whole group and brought them out in the bus, and we had a nice trail ride, and I was at the back. I was the back wrangler, you know, because it was a big group, and my buddy Shortcut was up front. He was leading the deal, and, you know, the horses know where they're going. So really the wrangling was like, don't put your foot all the way through the stirrup, ma'am. And, you know, all right, your saddle's leaning a little bit this way here. Hang on, I'm going to tighten up that cinch again and this and that. But this was a pretty easy group. I don't know how many of them had ridden before or whatever, but occasionally you'll get a ride that sticks in your mind. And this one was one of those. And it was just beautiful. It was cold out. And I remember at one point being the flirty fella that I am. I wound up trying to serenade these dudes with my harmonica skills in the back, you know, and the horse I was on, Johnny, is his bay horse. And he wasn't, you know, you hear about slicker broke and gun broke. He wasn't harmonica broke at all. So I go flying up the hill, you know, it was all big country, but they got a kick out of that. And apparently, apparently it worked, because it wound up this one gal. Boy, she was good looking. We wound up hitting it off pretty well. And we, you know, oh, thanks, that was a fun ride. Well, then later, we wound up out on the town, she and one of the other gals on the ride, and then my buddy Shortcut and myself. We just, you know, we're trying to be hospitable. So we went, you know,
right.
We're, you know, basically promoting the cowboy lifestyle in Colorado. So we figured it was our duty to go out with these girls.
Uh-huh.
And so we did, and wound up being a kind of a, I don't want to say it was a mistake or anything, but it wound up costing me a move to Texas after the season was done. And, you know, I'm real smart. I moved to Texas for the heat of the summer, which was like, okay. You know, it's, there's some sayings about that, about what a girl will do to a guy, but that was one of them. Anyway, I had gone down, we had a break in the season, you know, typically they call it the winter blues there, where the tourism kind of slacks off around right before Valentine's Day and whatever. So I went down to Texas and saw this gal, and we went to the San Antonio Rodeo, and it was neat, and I was all in. We went to a couple of music shows. Boy, it was great. So I moved down to Texas after the season. You know, April came around, the mountain was done with snow, so there weren't any tourists. So I decided, all right, pack up my gear and I'm out of here, like Willie Braun says. And so we went down, and I say we, it was just me. Anyway, we get down, I get down to Texas, and it just never occurred to me like that I wouldn't be able to find work wrangling, because it was Texas, right? So first couple days I was down there, I got in my truck and headed to the spot where it had the most dude ranches in the area, and showed up at a dude ranch in Bandera, Texas, which is one of the 18,000 self-proclaimed cowboy capitals of the world. And it was a pretty cool place, though, you know. Driving down the main drag, there were horses tied out in front of the bar. You can't really have a problem with that. Every bar had a water trough. And, you know, the town was all in. They knew where their bread was buttered for sure. So I get down and just showed up at a dude. I stopped at the feed store on the way into town. I said, you know, anybody looking for a hand? And they said, well, you might try these couple places. So stopped at the first place, looked over the outfit and said, hey, you guys need a wrangler? They said, yeah, show up Monday. So, okay. So I showed up and worked there for a couple of months, just wrangling dudes and riding, you know, the way they're always buying and selling horses at dude string outfits, it seems like. And we had a couple of, they were going to be decent horses, but they're a little young and they needed to have some miles, basically. And so mm-hmm. That was kind of the highlight, is I got to work on my horsemanship a little more, and actually, instead of just dealing with whatever horse I had to or got to work through problems. One horse was real poppy in his front end. He wound up, he'd be standing there and all of a sudden he'd be up on his back legs. And it's like, well, we can't very well put a dude on him. So why don't you put some miles on him? Okay. Another one that just, he had to go all the time. You wind up with horses that they're just chargy and that doesn't work for a nose to tail outfit. So we work on this one, try and bring him back in a little bit, slow him down. And so it was good. It taught me some things. And I wound up working there for a couple of months. And it was a total, instead of a day dude outfit like in Colorado, it was a guest ranch where people would show up and rent either a cabin or a room. And whole families would come out. And it was really great. We got a lot of interesting folks that would come there. A few foreigners. We had a group from Norway. A guy and a gal. Boy, they were great. Actually, I still keep in touch with them on Facebook. The guy's an incredible photographer. And since being over in Texas and really, I mean, he took to horses like a duck to water. It was great. The big guy, you picture him being like a death metal guy or something. He was not your typical cowboy or horseman, but no, I talked to him last year. He was back in the States. I said, what are you doing here? He says, oh, I'm going to Oklahoma horseshoeing school. That's what I'm doing now over in Norway. Wow. So it's just really interesting. And, you know, I can remember one of the guys, the wranglers that was there on staff was our shoer as well. And he would, you know, every day after we get done with rides or get done with the morning, early morning rides, because we do like 4 rides a day. So you try and find ways to keep it interesting. But he'd be shoeing a horse, and this guy was just all about it. Well, then, you know, he wound up deciding to do that for a living, which was pretty, pretty cool, actually, yeah. to even be witness to it, you know. And the horseshoeing thing has always just fascinated me. It's so frustrating to do it. I mean, I can level off a foot and tack on a shoe, and my horses stay sound, but it's not... To see some of these guys that have been doing it forever and the way they finish up a foot, it's incredible. So it's part of that whole Western cowboy lifestyle that, you know, if a guy goes to work on a big cow outfit, he's expected to shoe his horse, I guess, or used to be anymore. You know, now they're so good with shoes and everything else that maybe I don't know. I haven't worked a big cow outfit, but I would suspect that about half of them have a shoer come in, but I don't know. But anyway, so I'm down in Texas and things are going okay, but I'm getting tired of the same 300-400 acres that this ranch place had. And, you know, you can only answer the same questions so many times and things like that. And like I said, it takes a real special person to deal with that sort of atmosphere continually. And for me, it just was kind of losing its luster of, along with the reason that I moved to Texas was kind of losing its luster. And she was a great gal. She's a show jumper, and her horse was a dingbat, actually. And he's one of the horses in the book that I've got is named after him because he's just nuts. But anyway, I decided, you know, maybe a change of scenery is in order again. The old geographical cure. Try and figure that out. So I had been talking to some old buddies from back home, and we'd always kicked around the idea of doing a hunting television show. And so we decided, all right, let's make a go of it. So I moved home, and thank goodness for my folks, I guess, because they put up with me. And they said, yeah, all right, well, you know, this is what you're going to do. So I was back in Minnesota and tried for quite a while to get that going. And just, you know, again, you think you know, but you don't have any idea about a lot of stuff. And the truth of anything is that it looks better than it actually is. And that's how the hunting thing was. You put a camera on you while you're trying to hunt, and pretty soon it's not any fun. That happened to me. I went to school for motorcycle mechanics because I always liked to work on motorcycles. Well, then I was doing it for a living and I didn't like it at all. So it's the same sort of thing. So quit that before it completely ruined hunting for me, or before I allowed it to ruin hunting. It's mind over matter in a lot of things. And that happens with horses too. It happens with anything. You got to really be cognizant of, am I turning this into a job instead of something I'm passionate about? So after we chased that around for a year, I was back in Minnesota, and I had wound up not being happy, not happy because the hunting show didn't go, not happy because I had a girlfriend who was nuts.
Don't mince words.
Yeah, she was. I'll give you some names of people you can call and ask them. But I was looking for any way to kind of, all right, I need to be a little happier here. So I went back to horses because that was the one thing that, just my issue with being a wrangler never had anything to do with the horses. So I said, okay, I'm gonna get a job doing the horse thing, and I'm gonna do it without dudes because it's gonna be, that'll make it all better. Well, I went to work for this guy who fancied himself a horse trader. He had money and he wanted me to be an exercise rider for him. So I went to a tryout. I found the tryout on Craigslist and went there, and yeah, it was okay. I stayed on this nasty mare that he had for long enough and you know, walk, trot, lope in both directions and backed her up and side passed her. And then she went to bucking and I, you know, stepped off and said, yeah, that was all right. And he said, well, you didn't get tossed. Okay, show up Monday. And I'm starting to see a theme here. Maybe I should vet my employers a little bit better. So I showed up Monday and started working, and this guy would buy every piece of garbage he could find at the sale barn, and you know, we'd ride him into shape. He had a little arena, indoor arena, and he had trails across the road that we could go. And I mean, I had horses that hung me up in trees like you see on cartoons. He had this Frisian mare that his wife had, but she never rode her, and so you got to go exercise this horse. And you didn't want to take this horse too far away from the barn because she was just a snot all the time. And she'd buck me all the way across the cornfield and all the way back. And it's like, oh, this is great. This is so much fun. All right. I get home and, you know, try and lay on the floor and extend your back out because you're about 3 inches shorter after you get done riding that horse. And, you know, we'd get horses that were just spoiled and just, you know, bad attitudes or deadheads or whatever. And I don't know what's worse, a fiery horse that's got an attitude or a decent horse that's just dead, you know, just nothing enjoyable about him at all. And it's tough to tell, but he had a couple of decent cutting horses. Well, I thought they were decent. I'd never been on cutting horses before, but we didn't have enough ground or grass or room for cattle. So we'd always seen, they have those mechanical flags that run back and forth for cutting horses or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we said, well, we could do that. And a couple of the other, there was one gal and one other guy that did the riding there and myself. And we'd have, you know, 20 horses in at a time or whatever. And we'd take turns putting on a black sweatshirt and running back and forth and switch onto these cutting horses because we had to exercise them somehow. And it was so much fun, but it was just silly. It was like a bunch of little kids playing tag. And even then, you know, you get enough junky horses in and you get enough horses that have some potential, and you can kind of start to feel, okay, I like this. I don't like that. I want to work on this. I don't care to ride that horse anymore, this and that. And so I was starting to develop my taste a little bit, I guess, as a horseman, but it wound up getting to be a job, and I, you know, wasn't making enough to make it worth toughing out the times that weren't enjoyable for the times that were enjoyable. So I quit that, and I decided I needed to get out of town again. You know, at this point, I'm about halfway married to nut job, and that spooked me as bad as that bucking horse. So I decided I needed to go somewhere. I had an old hunting buddy that was living out in Montana, and which, you know, you and I both live in Montana now, and it's a great place. I called him up. I said, how's Montana? He says, it's really good. You should come out here. So like 2 weeks later, I had all my worldly possessions loaded into the back of this old trailer that I used when I was racing motorcycles when I was younger. And I came out to it. He had this old ranch place that had since been subdivided, but he had kept the main homestead, which was 26 acres or something. So it wasn't a big place, but enough ground to have horses and pretty cool old log house, the original log house from like 1909 or something. And I pulled my camper onto his place and I lived at his place for 2 years. And I lived in that camper for like 18 months because once I got out here, the place was just so perfect. I mean, everything is just, they call it Big Sky Country. And if you haven't been to Montana, you need to. You need to come out here and look at it because it's just, you can't see a picture of it and say, oh yeah, it looks like a big sky. You need to come out here and just be like, wow, this place is awesome. And there are a lot of good dude outfits around here that not necessarily right here. I mean, there's a few, but down toward Bozeman and wherever, and that you can wind up going and have a genuine experience where it's not just nose to tail trail rides. And you might get a feel for this kind of laid back, great way of life that everybody seems to draw everybody from California out here anyway. And, you know, I love it here. I wound up buying a little place and it wasn't fenced. So I had to fence it. I had to build a barn. And at that point I had two horses. Got about a year after I got here. No, it wasn't even that. It was like half a year after I got here. I went and bought two horses because I got permission from my buddy. He says, yeah, hey, you're living here. You may as well. I mean, you'll have to pay board. But so and then had one. She was an old mare. She went down. And so I was down to one horse. And then I got another one for free. And I heard you and John talking about from the Woe podcast when you interviewed him talking about how nothing's free. And a lot of these good horses are not free, you know, that even though they say they're free. Well, that's pretty well true. This he was, well, he still is a little bit rammy and a little crabby, but he wasn't sound either. He had a recent injury and he hadn't been ridden in like 6.5 years. And so I got this horse for free and, of course, put up with him and feed him long enough and work on him enough to get him sound and get him healthy and at some modicum of good behavior. And, you know, he's actually turned out to be a pretty decent horse. He's the boss for sure. My other horse, he's just like, hey, what are you doing? And this horse is like, hey, what are you doing? So they're funny. They got their own personalities and everything.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm at a level now where as far as in my horse experience, and I hope this isn't the peak of it, but where it's just pure enjoyment again. And that's, you know, I'm not worried about having to deal with other people's garbage or deal with other horses' garbage or whatever. It's just kind of that same feeling that you get when you're moving cows. It's just right. It's just fun. And so that's I don't know, a long-winded version of an uninteresting story about how I got out here.
Well, I don't think it's uninteresting. I think it's pretty cool. And I'm curious about a few things that you mentioned. You know, you talked about how when you were in Steamboat, you know, kind of got involved with a couple other guys and started riding and learning to rope and whatnot. Do you think that had you not kind of gotten involved in the rodeo and met up with those guys, if you would have been led down this path? I mean, would you have still sort of pursued this lifestyle if it weren't for those other people?
Well, it's tough to say. You know, hindsight's always 20/20.
Right.
But I think with my sort of affinity for horses that I now understand as, and I can't see myself not having them, I think there's a pretty good chance I would be doing something in this same way, in the same vein. But I don't know that I would have had the fire lit under me the way that I did if I hadn't just gone out and made it happen with getting involved with horses and working with them in any way that I could. You know, when I worked at the rodeo, I didn't ride at all during the performance or anything like that. I was pulling barriers and picking up the sheep from the ram scramble and different stuff like that. That it was just being around these people. And I think it's the people as much as anything you know, they're good people. And you want to spend more time. It's like being in a hockey locker room with people that are joking around. It's like being, you know, at the kitchen table with your grandma and learning something from her. There's just all sorts of, analogies that you can make, but it's that warm feeling of home that I felt at the rodeo. And I think I wanted more of it.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you talk to cow guys now, guys that run herds and whatever, and say, you know, you look at kind of, why do you do this? And they say, well, why not? They say, well, you could make a lot more money doing this, or you could do that. And they say, yeah, but there's cows here and horses. I say, all right, sounds good.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I tend to think that it's it wasn't me calling the shots. The good decisions of my life, the things that actually wound up working out well, there is God was at work there, not me. So, you know, you wind up, I guess, the older I get, you know, you look back, the older I get, the more I see where things could have gone differently. And I look at why they didn't go differently. And for me, it's God for sure. And I have a feeling that it's God for everybody, but they just maybe choose to think that they've got it all together instead. I'm not so proud to say that I didn't think it was that for quite a while. And now that I know, it's a whole different, that warm feeling of sitting at the counter with your grandma and learning something. It's the same deal. So I don't know. How's that?
Well, you know, I was curious about that because I've often thought to myself that I love the Western way of life. I love riding horses. I love just being involved in rodeo and anything that's related. But if I couldn't do any of that, you know, if I couldn't ever get on another horse again, I think being a part of this club, if you want to call it that, just being like a member of the whole Western society, it's hard to explain when you're not in it, but I guess it's the people, like you said, that make it so special, because you just, the people are just genuine and, you know, salt of the earth. And I know that no matter where I go, especially in Nevada, because I grew up there, that I have a friend in any town. And it seems like most people, especially like you, who didn't come from, you know, you didn't grow up on a ranch, you didn't come from that background. It's a person or people that sort of helped guide you on your path, other people that were involved. And I think that's true for a lot of people. They meet somebody that's into it and they're like, oh, well, this seems cool. I think I want to do this too. Well,
absolutely. And how many times do you hear a story and maybe we hear more of it because we're tuned into it, I guess, or whatever. I didn't really like horses, but then I got involved with this person who was really into horses. And then that person who in the beginning wasn't really that into it has now gone way over the level of involvement that somebody else has.
Right. And that happens a lot, you know, at my dad's, especially because people will come and to take a riding lesson or something and they've just got a horse and they want to just take a basic horsemanship riding lesson. And then they get around that environment and people are cutting and doing different things and competing in different events. And then they are like, wow, this is really cool. I think I want to buy a cutting horse. I think I want to do this, you know, and it just sort of snowballs once you get a, it's like a, you know, it's like a gateway. You have your little your backyard horse is kind of a gateway into other aspects of it.
Well, that and, you know, bringing it back to the people that you enjoy that with, I think it's all people. You know, a horse is a horse, of course, but it's it's like, why do guys go buy a Harley when they hit 45 years old? It's not because they like the Harley. It's because they like going out with their buddies and riding. And then you can take it to different levels. Like my old man went and got a Harley and he and his buddies would go once a year and do a big riding trip. And that was their whole, you know, now all of a sudden they're the road warriors, you know, and it's not, you know, we're not in 1890 having to cut through snowdrifts that swallow cattle and we're not doing this and that, but we still feel like we are, you know, us, the horse people, you know, it's, we're not the show jumpers aren't out chasing foxes and whatever, but they feel like they are, and they all love it together, you know. And the big thing is the camaraderie, I think, and the conversation you and I are having right now. It's the same mm-hmm. conversation you can go down to any feed store or sale barn yep. and have. You sit there, you go down to the sale barn, and a lot of them have a coffee pot, and it's like the water cooler, you know. Everybody yep. stands around, and they're just telling, if a guy wanted the best education, I guess a girl too, but you want the best education you can get in the Western lifestyle, you got to just go hang out with people who have been there and done it and yep. learned it, you know, and pick up and take everything with a grain of salt, and then give half of that salt to your horse.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the feed store, because I always say that, you know, it's kind of like the beauty salon for cowboys and ranchers. I mean, my dad, that's where he gets all his gossip, is a local feed store.
Oh, for sure.
He goes down there and he knows what's going on with everyone in town.
Yeah, we got one down here where, you know, it's like you can't get to the fuel pump because there's four guys sitting there talking to each other, and they don't care that you can't get to the fuel pump. They're like, look, we're talking about the three elk that got shot over on his place, and we're talking about, you know, calving seems to come earlier and earlier, and boy, hay prices are up, and this and that. And tell you what, your diesel fuel can wait. Why don't you put that thing in park and just come over here and talk to us for a while? And it's like, okay, that's sounds good, you know? I just love it. I love talking to old people. I think I say old people. I shouldn't say that. That's mean. But, you know, I'm coming on 30 now. And I feel like I still felt when I was, well, actually, I feel like I know less now than I did when I was 15 or 16.
Well, you've done, I mean, you played hockey and you were involved with motorcycles and stuff. How did being involved in those activities differ from like this lifestyle? I mean, was it just sort of an activity versus a full on lifestyle? Or, I mean, what made you choose this over that?
Well, a couple of things, I guess. The big difference is aggression, I think. If you were to pinpoint it, you know, hockey's an aggressive game when I was playing that, especially, you know, at the very minimal level of competitive hockey that I played, you got to be aggressive. And the same with racing motorcycles. As far as I raced motocross, which was, it's like you see on TV, the most popular one now, not the guys going upside down and stuff, but, you know, racing, charging, going really hard. And the more aggression you put into it, the better you are. And your teammates in hockey, that part was very similar to this. And that's still, you know, that's the reason that guys that can't skate anymore still go and hang out with their buddies and mm-hmm. maybe take one or two shifts on the ice. It's like, oh, okay, it's about giving each other a hard time and everything. And that's the part that everybody really likes about it. Well, that's what I get out of hanging out with other horsemen. You know, mm-hmm. you can make fun of somebody's saddle, call it, you know, I got an Austria or a Wade saddle, and my buddy says, oh, you got Australian saddle there, huh? You know, it's like, okay, I get it. Yeah, ha ha. It's that same sort of thing. But I would say also the element of danger is a lot. Yeah, you're dealing with a wild animal, but the speeds and everything are a lot slower. You know, if I get hit from behind on the rink, I could wind up paralyzed. If I come off on a jump, and actually this happened a number of times, you wind up with busted bones. But for the most part, you get tossed off a horse and the horse wants away from you as bad as you want away from it. So it's as long as you can hit the ground and not hurt yourself, you're probably okay. That's why yeah. you have sand in the arena, you know.
I guess the sand is a little softer than the ice.
But, you know, if you get to that point while you're just riding, you didn't do your homework or something, you know, where anything can happen. Yeah, it's an animal, but the more time you spend with your horse, the better you get with building a relationship with your horse, which is one of those things that, boy, everybody should experience, falling in love with a horse, because it's just, it's like having a good dog that's happy to see you or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. Or from what I've heard, it's like having a good spouse, but I don't know.
Well, Sam, you wrote a book, kind of, I mean, it's a fiction book, but it has a lot of your experiences sort of mixed into it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fictional tale that kind of teaches some things. It's aimed at kind of a younger demographic. You know, I remember being in school and being, you know, about 12 years old or 12 to 15, I guess, and not finding anything that I really wanted to read. And now, you know, this, of course, I'm dating myself, but it's all vampires and whatever else for kids. So I remember, you know, reading old Hardy Boys books and mm-hmm. old Nancy Drew and Hardy Boys books. I like those because, you know, Nancy was cute. That's what I heard anyway. That's what I pictured. And, you know, that sort of stuff, My Side of the Mountain and The Hatchet and different books for boys that taught you something. Like, it's tough to find that anymore. And so I've been writing for a while. I've been writing short stories and whatever else. I got to where I was writing a short story about some high school rodeo kids and ranch kids, and it got a little longer and a little longer, and I was throwing in more and more of the names and experiences that I've had, whether it was, you know, by accident or on purpose, or that I've seen from a distance or whatever, and wound up writing, I think it's a pretty nice little story.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to reading it. I haven't had a chance to do it yet, but you sent me a copy and I'm really excited. I've been thinking about letting my boyfriend's son read it because he's about the right age. You know, he's going to be 12 in a couple months, but I'm not sure I want to give it up to him before I get to read it first.
Well, so, you know, as somebody who wrote it, who's very partial to it, I think you'll like it. And it actually doesn't take you that long. It's not, it's a page turner, I guess. It's not like it's a John Grisham novel, or it's not like Larry McMurtry.
Yeah.
Got, you know, 1,000 pages of Lonesome Dove. It's 200 pages and it flows pretty well. I think you could get through it in a hurry. So
what's the basis of the story?
The basis of the story, it's centered around a character named Austin, who he's 17 years old, and he moves up to, it's kind of an indiscriminate place up high in the Northern Mountains, Northern Rockies. And, you know, in my head, it was Montana, but I never labeled it as Montana. And of course, I started writing it when I was back in Minnesota. So, and he comes up, he's from a broken family, and he comes up and moves in with a Texas oil man, because he's from Texas. And somehow or other, he got hooked up with this Texas oil man that has bought this old ranch, this rundown ranch up here, and decided, because he always wanted to be a cowboy, he always wanted to own a ranch. And so they come up and they resurrect this old ranch, and it's about him, you know, getting to live life in a new area, kind of not coming of age, but learning how to fit into the new group by being, you know, following those values that cowboys hold dear, being observant and being respectful and all of that. And in there, he meets some pretty girls and rides some good horses and rides some bad horses and has a couple of wrecks and winds up rodeoing for the high school rodeo team. And they go on to have some success. And I'm not going to tell you any more than that. I will say, though, it's clean. You know, it's not, there's no cussing in it. There's no gratuitous scenes. There's a few suggestive things, but you hear about some of these that are targeted at kids and you wonder why teenage pregnancy is up, and it's no mystery. Well, you won't have to worry about my book being part of that trend.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. And it teaches some horse training and different things. And I think I would have picked it up and read it cover to cover 16 times as a kid. So,
well, that's pretty cool, because I think, I mean, being a female myself and an avid reader, I grew up reading a lot of books, and there were quite a few books for girls about horses, but not very many for boys. I've noticed, just looking for books for the kids, that I can find a lot more about girls than I can boys. Oh, so,
for sure. Yeah, there's a real, I have an aunt who's a teacher, and she said, boy, you know, you should really fill that. This is 5 or 6 years ago. She says, you could really write something for teenage boys, because they just run out of stuff. And, mm-hmm. you know, I remember in school doing reports on, it was either you had to get a Western and the teacher didn't understand it, or you had to get like a Field and Stream article or something. So if it would hold my interest, the teacher probably wasn't interested in it. And it was stuff that I didn't completely understand as a reader, but it at least was subject matter that was interesting. So I went with, okay, a little bit of danger, fast horses, good looking cowgirls, and rodeo. Who doesn't like that?
Right. You know?
And it's right, called Saddle My Good Horse, which is kind of a play on the deal. Inside the book, there's a number of horse training scenes, and it kind of boils down to there's not really bad horses. I know I've talked a little bit about bad horses, but it's just horses that didn't have a start the right mm-hmm. way. It didn't learn mm-hmm. how to work, didn't learn how to, you know, every horse when it comes out is a clean slate, it seems like, unless they're oxygen deprived or something like that when they're real young. But it's basically the guy, the protagonist in the story, like Austin, he's got a touch with horses, and it's about working with each horse and making the right thing easy and the wrong thing difficult. And mm-hmm. There's a little bit of that where every horse that you wind up with in the story winds up being a decent horse. They just, you got to put in the time. And that's a good lesson for anybody who's considering horses or wants to get into it. The more time you spend with them, yeah, they'll frustrate you beyond belief, but boy, the more time you spend with them, the better off you are.
Yep. That was what my dad used to always tell us when we were kids. If you don't like the horse you've got to make it into something you do like.
Yep.
And I really hated that. I really hated when he said that, because one summer he decided I needed a project. So he went out and bought me this hard-headed Appy and made me ride him every day. And I didn't like it for several months. And then by the time he did turn out to be halfway decent, he traded him for another one. So I got to start all over again.
Think of all the stuff you learned, though.
I know. I mean, you do learn a lot more with the hard-headed ones than you do with the easy ones, because, as he says, the easy ones kind of train themselves.
Yeah, and you learn more about you, I think, when you have to get over. It's like adversity always teaches you something, no matter what you're doing, you know? You run your checkbook down to zero, well, that's adversity, and you got to figure out something. Some way to get out of it. And I'm not talking about a bailout. I'm talking about, you know, it's time to pull up your bootstraps here. Here we go. You know, it's that same sort of thing with horses, and they'll teach you to measure your emotions, because they're like a mirror, you know, except it's a funhouse mirror that just makes you look big and scary.
Oh, that's a good analogy. I like that.
Well, I got another one for you then. You're getting into the whole Western lifestyle. Say when I was getting into it, you know, for a little while, it was kind of like, oh, I really like that hat. I really like those boots. I really like this. And if you got some dough, that's fine. But those hats, no matter how expensive they are, they don't come with knowledge implanted in them. You just mm-hmm. got to get out there and do it. You know, you can buy the fanciest boots ever, but if you don't know how to walk through the mud and get to your horse and halter it the right way and this and that, what's the difference? You know, you see a lot of old timey guys that just wear coveralls and White's pack boots every day and a Scotch cap, because it's the whole style thing is, it's great. And you were just at the NFR, I think, so you probably saw plenty of guys with all hat and no cattle, but you wind up just, it's utilitarian. Whatever works for you, this is just for anything, not even just dress, but whatever works and is effective is cool. And so if it means you're training a horse in a square pen instead of a round pen, because that's what you have, well, then that's what you do. If it means that, you know, you got an old stock trailer because you can't afford the living quarters horse trailer, well, if it gets you to the trailhead where you can go riding and do some good training over logs and cricks and different things, then that's what you do. And that's cool. You know, mm-hmm. So we put a lot of emphasis, and I'm guilty of it as well, about having the latest and greatest and this and that. But the main thing is you just got to do it. Just got to do what you're going to do. You know, the kid, kid riding a bicycle when he's 5 years old doesn't care how shiny the bicycle is. He's learning how to ride a bike. You know, it's right. That same sort of thing. So I don't know. Maybe that was out of place there, but I don't know.
No, I think a lot of times newcomers can be intimidated by that a little bit. And probably a good example of that is, you know, you mentioned the NFR and Fallon Taylor, who's been wearing a helmet at the rodeo. And a lot of people who are new to horses they feel weird about wearing a helmet because, you know, the veterans don't wear one and,
right. And
people judge them or whatever. And, you know, you just can't let that stop you. You can't let other people's, and it's hard, you know, but you can't let other people's opinions hold you back.
Absolutely. You know,
you're never going to get anywhere.
There's my buddy here. He had his niece come out this summer and she came out from North Dakota and she wanted to ride a lot. And she's a good little rider, but her parents, she's 14 or something. And her parents required her to wear a helmet. She was like upset about it because she didn't want to look funny or she was self-conscious. It's like, who cares? We're all out riding horses.
Yeah.
You know, you're the smart one out of the group because you have a helmet on. You know, the rest of us, well, luckily I don't have that much to lose if I bang my head. But, you know, as far as brain power is concerned, at least there's some girls in Minnesota that would tell you that. But it's silly not to. I saw Fallon wearing that actually in one of the highlight videos and it kind of surprised me. But then I was like, you know, that's a really great thing. You know, you look at all the bull riders, it's getting over that old school stigma. Oh, now they all wear, you know, for a while they didn't wear vests even, you know, right.
Well, they hadn't invented them. I mean, for the bull riders anyway, for a while.
Right. It's like, why wouldn't you do this? You know, and we all have our own line, but I would say for folks, don't ever feel like you have to do something just to fit in. And that's not just for horses. I mean, especially with helmets and horses, but you know, in life, if you're doing something, you don't feel right about it, don't do it. You know, or do it better. Helmets, let's see, we're going to ride this horse that potentially, and it probably won't happen, but potentially I could fall off and hurt myself. Well, why wouldn't I protect myself? And, you know, there's schools of thought where guys say, well, what a way to go. It's like, yeah, well, what a way to be a vegetable too. You know, I should wear a helmet because I'm the neighbor kid who's 10 years old has a way better seat in the saddle than I do. So if anybody's going to come off, it's me. That's just one of those things, I guess, where if you think about it too much, there's no choice but to be safe and smart. But so some of us just choose not to think about it too much.
Yeah, well, my dad was never too concerned about what other people thought. And so, you know, we all a lot of times had kind of old beater trailers and stuff. And he was just like, it doesn't matter what you show up in. It matters what you do when you get there. You know,
that's
like
right.
If you're going to go compete, and it makes it just that much sweeter when you show up in the beat up rig and everybody looks at you and thinks, oh, who's this person? And then you go out there and kick their butts.
Yeah. Well, see, I was never into showing horses, but I know with motorcycles that happened as well.
Yeah.
Where guys would show up with a minivan and a single rail trailer with a ratty old bike on it. And you go, oh, okay. And then they come out and just wax everybody. It's like,
yeah.
Wow. Holy cow. I guess I didn't need those extra parts that I worked all week for to do it. Yeah. Maybe I just need to be better.
Yeah, exactly. Just be better. Well, that's a good note to start wrapping up on. If people want to find you, Sam, where's the best place to look you up online?
Well, I've got a blog website deal where you can link to Amazon from there and find the book. There's an ad on there and it's samfinden.com. So www.samfinden.com. And there's little short stories and different interesting things that I think are interesting anyway. And if they want to email me, they can just email sam@samfinden.com. I'd love to hear from you and hear about the book, if you loved it or hated it or whatever, and hear about if you got any dirt on Alyssa. I'd like to hear that as well.
Well, I did notice some awesome Amazon reviews for your book, so that's pretty cool.
You know, it's been a pretty good reception. It's, I think as much as anything, it's just getting it in the hands of kids that'll actually enjoy it. And, you know, you might think, oh, my kid's not into horses. Well, is he into teenage girls? Is he into rodeo? Is he into, you know, there's something in boys especially, but people in general and teenagers where you want to figure out how things work. And you got a lot of questions and you start checking off the answers to these questions. Mm-hmm. And hopefully this book kind of teaches a few of the answers to a few of the questions that a few kids have. So
that's very cool. I just have one final question for you, and I think you know what it is because you listen to the podcast.
I might.
What do you think is the most important quality for any good cowboy to have?
Okay. The most important quality, in my opinion, for any cowboy to have is to be considerate. And I don't mean it just to people. I mean you could say be observant as well, but be considerate. You got to consider how hard this hill is on your horse. You got to consider that if you drive like an idiot, your truck's going to break down. You got to consider how, if I go over here and chase after this cow, what that's going to do to the rest of the herd. What, you know, consider that your body language affects your horse. And you might be scaring your horse more than your horse is scaring you. Consider, you know, all sorts of things. And, you know, just be, a lot of times we're out there doing things with horses and with the this way of life, and you're doing it by yourself. And you think, oh, nobody will know. But every action has some sort of downfall or some sort of, I can't think of the right word right now.
Consequence.
Yes, consequence. That's what I was looking for. And so if I don't close this gate tight, then the cows get out. And then it's somebody else's problem. And then you made more work for them. So you were inconsiderate to that person. You know, all of these things, if you don't put your hay up on pallets, well, then you're going to rot out the bottom of the bales and your horses have the potential of getting sick. If you're, you know, you always feed your horses before you feed yourself. I believe in that. I think that's, you know, I wake up in the morning, go feed my horses, and then come in and start drinking coffee. It's just, you have to. There's these amazing animals and amazing people that depend on you being your best all the time. And that's the way it is in any walk of life. But it's especially apparent with horses and cattle and dogs, things that abound in this area of the country and this way of life. And so just be cognizant of that. Be observant. Observe a fence wire that's down. I've had a horse get hooked in a fence wire that I thought was okay, you know. But, oh, just because they haven't stepped over it for the last month while it's been loose doesn't mean that they're not gonna, because they will. Because I don't know if people know this, but if there's something for a horse to get hurt on, they'll do it, you know. So consider everything, be observant, always watch, you know, look at the cows. Is this one limping? Is that one coughing? What's going on? You know, is that pack, you're on a pack trip, is that saddle slipping? Is this rubbing on the horse? Why? Oh, you hate getting done with a trail ride and seeing the hair worn off of withers. That means you weren't observant. That means you weren't considerate and you were probably in a hurry. Mm-hmm. And if you're in a hurry, you've already done something wrong. So it's better to just slow down, observe everything, and consider all the consequences of every action. So that's a long-winded answer again, but no, that's what I would say.
That's great. I think that's a great answer and something that everybody should think about. Well, not just cowboys.
Yeah. It sounds like it's not a revelation or anything. Oh, be considerate. Yeah.
Well, you know, sometimes we need to be reminded of those simple things. So.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show today, Sam. I really appreciate it. I love hearing your story, and I think the audience is really going to enjoy it as well.
I hope so. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to your fans, and you know, hopefully I get to do it again sometime.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Sam Finden. You can find links, of course, to his book and any of the other resources we mentioned in the episode at earnyourspurs.com/episode20. If you have been enjoying the podcast and haven't done so already, I would really appreciate it if you would hop on over to iTunes and subscribe to the show and leave us a review. It's a really great way to help other people find the show. And finally, don't forget to go to earnyourspurs.com and click on the Cowboy Q&A tab to leave your question. If you're listening to this episode pretty close to when it comes out, there are still 2 gift certificates for Cinch Jeans. You can pick either a pair of Cinch Jeans or a shirt if your question is among the first 2 I answer on the podcast. So please make sure you jump over and do that. As always, thank you so much for being here. I really, really appreciate each and every one of you, and I wish you the most fabulous 2015 ever. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next week.
For listening to the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Until next time, happy trails and spur on.